This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Congress is in recess, and that means town hall meetings back in members' districts. Last Friday, Idaho Republican Congressman Raul Labrador took the stage and took heat from constituents in Lewiston and Coeur d'Alene. It was at the Lewiston meeting that Labrador uttered words that immediately put him in the crosshairs of opponents of the American Health Care Act. He said no one has ever died from not having health insurance, the inference being that people can always go to the emergency room because the hospitals can't turn them away. One interesting side note about Raul Labrador this week, the Associated Press reported Tuesday that he won't be running for re-election to Congress next year because he's filed to run for Idaho governor instead. While Labrador was attending town hall meetings during the recess, Washington's Kathy McMorris Rogers stuck to her policy of skipping large gatherings, preferring private meetings with smaller groups of constituents. And so Tuesday evening's healthcare town hall at the Spokane Unitarian Universalist Church, sponsored by the progressive group Fuse Washington, was more pep rally than listening session. The F word, fascist, was dropped more than once by speakers such as David Randall.
What we have now is a fascist government. I define fascism as a bunch of rich white guys stripping away the supposedly inalienable rights of all citizens so that they can amass an obscene amount of wealth at the expense of the 99%.
Bill Miller brought his guitar and his new song, a satire that equated Congresswoman McMorris Rogers with a popular doll from the 1960s.
I am Chatty Cathy, and I so love the rich. When they pay me money, honey, I will scratch their itch. All you corporate hucksters can strip the country bare. I'm just a talking dolly, so I don't really care. Chatty Cathy, Chatty Cathy, woo! A vacuous Republican doll.
Most of the speakers, though, were earnest. Their messages were based on their fears that the dropping of the Affordable Care Act in favor of the American Health Care Act means bad news for poor people who are most in need of health insurance. Dr. Paula Landsberger recalled her days as medical director for Project Access. That's the Spokane program in which physicians donate their time to see patients without insurance. She said before the Affordable Care Act, Project Access took about 100 applications a month.
People desperate for health care because they didn't have any other options. When the Affordable Care Act came in, you know how many applications we got each month? 4. People had real health care. It put me out of a job. I was so happy. So when certain Republicans of our state and neighboring states say that people don't die because they don't have health care, I don't believe it. I've seen it.
Landsberger's fervor was matched by a fellow physician, retired family practice and emergency room doctor William Lamont Worden. He described himself as a former Air Force lieutenant colonel who served in Vietnam and Desert Storm. As he recited the broad list of organizations that have come out in opposition to the AHCA,
even conservative organizations such as Tea Party Patriots, Cato Institute, Heritage Action, Americans for Prosperity, Freedom Works, and Club for Growth, as well as the American Medical
He built to this crescendo.
Health insurance companies raise the cost of health care premiums, deny patients medical treatment due to pre-existing conditions, and even withdraw their services altogether from entire counties or states to benefit their own self-interest. My simple question is, why doesn't the United States of America join the rest of the civilized, developed countries of the world and offer its citizens a single-payer Medicare for all national health care plans?
Several speakers vowed to support candidates who run against Kathy McMorris Rogers if she decides to run again in 2018. Spokane Public Television, KSPS, is joining forces with Eastern Washington University to hold several public forums about the Vietnam War. Spokane Public Radio's Steve Jackson reports.
The forums have been planned to complement the latest efforts by producer Ken Burns and his latest 18-hour series on the Vietnam War to air on PBS stations in September. Organizers of the local events explain that our Eastern Washington region is home to some 140,000 veterans, many who served during the Asian conflict, as well as home to many Vietnamese exiles and thousands who participated in Vietnam-era protests. KSPS spokeswoman Sandra Kernerman says the effects of that war are still being felt in American society today.
the veterans themselves are still in many instances suffering from grievous health issues. And also, before Vietnam, everybody accepted that what their government said was true. Everyone just said, if we have this war going on and we need you to serve, you went, because it was not to be questioned, that need. And Vietnam really was a change, a paradigm shift, really, of how people thought of their government.
The first public forum event is being held Thursday. Kernerman says the participants will include several who served in the military at that time, as well as a Whitworth professor who has worked in studies related to social activism and protest.
We are not just going to share anecdotes. That's fascinating to listen to someone hash through their war stories, and it makes your hair stand on end and all of that. But we would like to take it a little past that. And what we're looking for is that personal spin of who these people were when they went into the war, and who they are now, and how their experiences in Vietnam has informed the rest of their lives.
The initial forum is being held Thursday. The second event is being planned for July. And in August, the traveling version of the Vietnam Veterans War Memorial, called The Wall That Heals, will be on display at Mirabeau Meadows Park in Spokane Valley. I'm Steve Jackson reporting.
Spokane is known as an Air Force town, given its long association with Fairchild Air Force Base and Phelps Field. But the U.S. Navy is working to make inroads here. In 2012, the Navy held a week's worth of events in the region, and it's back this year. Next week has been declared Spokane Navy Week as part of the Lilac Festival celebration.
Navy Weeks are a way for the United States Navy to come into a town that really isn't Navy heavy, if you will. Not a lot of Navy presence here.
Gary Ross is an event planner for the Navy Office of Community Outreach. Recently, he visited Spokane to meet with the mayor and with Lilac Festival planners. He and four other Navy planners developed 15 Navy Week programs in American cities each year.
Well, first of all, we've been doing this since 2005, and to date, we've done nearly 200 Navy Weeks in 75 different markets across the United States. And as I stated before, we don't go into what we call fleet concentration areas. We go where there's no Navy, because the purpose of this is Navy outreach and to educate the people about what the Navy is all about. So we bring in these different assets, different sailors from different backgrounds. For instance, in Spokane, we're having a helicopter squadron come all the way from Norfolk, Virginia, bringing a big CH-53 Sea Stallion helicopter. And that'll be moved around the city to different venues, Spokane Community College, West Valley High School, for big Navy STEM days out there. We have a full Navy band coming into town. We have USS Constitution sailors coming into town from the oldest commissioned warship up there, the three-masted sailboat up there. In Boston, and then we have explosive ordnance disposal technicians coming in from San Diego, California, with all their static display materials, and they'll be engaging schools. We always like to take advantage of when we go to a city that schools are still in session, because it's all about educating those kids. So we bring a lot of sailors from different backgrounds and engage as many people of the public of Spokane as we possibly can.
So is there a recruiting component to this for...
It's an excellent question, and the answer to that is no. Now, the Navy Recruiting District works with us because they know the area. They know the schools that we can get into, but no, we don't carry a big stack of oaths of enlistment and things like that. It's all about outreach, and it's all about education.
So I think the closest Navy presence for us is the south end of Lake Ponderay in North Idaho, where they had a history of submarines and that sort of thing, because it's deep there.
It's interesting that you bring that up. Bayview is a place. One of the groups of sailors we're bringing in for Spokane Navy Week are the USS Washington sailors. That's the Navy's newest Virginia-class fast attack submarine. So that we're going to take them out to Bayview, because that's a big acoustic research, deepest lake anywhere around here. And the United States Navy is heavily involved in that. And as you know, sonar is big in the submarine force.
So do they actually put submarines in Lake Ponderay?
They do. Really? There's actually like training submarines out there. that they do a lot of acoustic testing with, try to make the our submarines more quieter when they're out on the oceans. So that is certainly one event that we're trying to schedule for our Washington sailors.
And who's that open to?
The base itself?
Yeah.
Well, the base itself is manned by scientists and researchers, and I believe they do have some active duty sailors out there as part of the cadre. I don't know if it's public. In other words, I don't think anybody can just drive on board and see it.
So now Spokane is a military town, has a long history, but it's mostly been an Air Force town, at least in the last 60, 70 years. Does the Air Force play any of this? I mean, is there some sort of rivalry or is it a cooperative sort of thing?
No, it's very cooperative in the fact that I will tell you that the Navy is very much big into these Navy Weeks, and we're the only service out of all of them that plays actively in it year after year. We do 15 Navy Weeks a year. I know the Marine Corps does one Marine Corps week a year in a city that they choose. But when they do that one Marine Corps week, it's a huge event where they're bringing in tanks and a lot of different Marines. Our event happens for a week. We bring in as many sailors as we possibly can. And no, the cooperation that we would get from any other military unit in the city that we're at has been outstanding. We know it always will be that way. And yes, we do love the Air Force too, believe it or not.
So we're in a world where we like to measure everything. And so how do you measure the benefits of a week like this?
That's a very good question. So there's a lot of math that goes into what cities we go to. And one of the big companies that we engage in is Gallup. We've been working with Gallup for about 10 years now, and they'll go into a city before we even do the Navy Week. Then they come to the city during the Navy Week, and then a month after the Navy Week's over, and they're interviewing all these people, asking those questions. How much do you know about your Navy? What service do you think is number one in recruiting? Would you, as a grandparent, recommend your grandson or granddaughter to join the Navy? We did our work, our due diligence on how impactful 2012 was here in Spokane. We found out that it was very impactful, and that's due in large part to number one, the love of the military of the people of Spokane. Number two, the huge event that the Lilac Festival brings during the whole week, to include the largest Torchlight Veterans Parade in the nation. And when we looked at that, when we were here in 2012, I told my bosses personally, I said, we have to get back to Spokane quickly. I said, because they were a fine city for us in 2012, and we know it's going to even be better this year.
Is the Navy invited to be part of the Torchlight Parade?
Absolutely. We are in it. We are in it with the Air Force. So that's going to be fun. That's going to be an interesting event. In fact, the helo that we're bringing in from Norfolk. So as you probably know, and the people of Spokane know, they'll do a flyover of the Air Force tankers from Fairchild. Well, we're going to bring our helicopter in too and do a little flyover to kick off the parade. So it's going to be fun. It's really going to be a great event.
Gary Ross is an event planner for the U.S. Navy Office of Community Outreach. The Navy's participation in the Torchlight Parade will provide a nice crescendo to Spokane Navy Week. Other events include Navy Day at Spokane Community College on Tuesday the 16th. There's a block party at West Valley High School Thursday evening. And Navy STEM Day at the Mobius Science Center on Friday. Navy musicians will put on several performances around the region. You can find the Spokane Navy Week schedule on the Inland Journal page of the Spokane Public Radio website. Click on this story.
Send us away.
This week and next, members of the Washington Department of Ecology's Watershed Unit are taking a unique trip. On Monday, they started their venture in Rock Creek in northern Whitman County, and then they moved into Hangman Creek.
Looking at non-point pollution, but also documenting the riparian health and the overall stream health.
That's Steve Hummel. Today we met him and his partner Martin Quinn as they prepared to continue their voyage. Quinn says the goal is to get a water level view of the 60-mile stretch of stream, which meanders through farmland south of Spokane and eventually empties into the Spokane River.
By getting down on the river and doing these assessments, we get a much better view than we can just from the public right-of-way.
This time of year, the water runs muddy, which in itself isn't unusual. The problem, says Hummel, is that Hangman often runs muddy.
So you can even see with your naked eye many times of the year where the confluence of Hangman and the Spokane River, you see the clean or blue color of the Spokane River and the plume of sediment from Hangman Creek crashing into the Spokane.
The state has worked for years to clean up the Spokane. The entities that dump treated wastewater into the river have had to spend millions to clean up their effluent. They are referred to as point sources because there's a specific place from where the wastewater is released. Ecology is also working to reduce the pollution from non-point sources, such as Hangman. The first step is to find out from where that pollution is coming. When we arrived, Hummel and Quinn were preparing their supplies for the day. The bottom of their canoe is all scuffed.
This was a brand new canoe at the start of the trip. It's had a rough go. Most of the damage is from Rock Creek. It's pretty bony.
There's a GoPro on the boat to record video. About three times a day, they get out and take a closer look. They check the vegetation, what's native and what's not. Where are the trees growing, and where is the water shaded? How badly are the banks eroding? Hummel is also looking for insects.
The bugs are going to give us a good idea of the overall water quality of Hangman Creek. You'd see in a heavily impacted stream, there's going to be more like black fly larvae or midge larvae, really tolerant species. In a nice healthy stream, you'd see more stone flies and mayflies and caddisflies.
They record their findings on an iPad. Before they climb in their boat and start today's trip, Quinn takes me to the rail of a small bridge, and we look upstream. Right in front of us, the creek has widened like a bulging artery. An island of reeds has grown right in the middle of the channel, forcing the water to go around it.
So as you can see here, it's pushing the flow out left and right, and when there's substantially higher flows, that increases the possibility of it going beyond its normal bankful width. And then you've got flooding issues and increased erosion as well.
He says it's not a healthy riparian channel. Hummel points to other signs of that.
All of the grass you're seeing right here is reed canary grass, which is invasive. It's that grass that has really shallow roots. And just looking forward, instead of a nice, healthy, stabilized stream bank, on the right bank looking downstream here, you can see it sloughing off into the stream.
This stream should be swimmable and fishable, but most people looking at it right now would probably be wise to make the choice of not dipping their toes in there.
Ecology's plan now is to gather evidence and measure the extent of the problem in Hangman Creek. Over the years, the agency has worked with private partners to make improvements at specific spots along the creek. It plans to continue with that in hopes of making Hangman Creek a healthier place. Spokane's Bloomsday Run often has an international feel, if for no other reason than the winners of the race are usually from other nations. But this year it had another layer of intrigue because of the small number of refugees who participated. Spokane Public Radio intern reporter Emily Goodell talked with one.
Out of nearly 40,000 Bloomsday runners, a few dozen were refugees from other nations. One is 22-year-old Mohamed Al-Musli. Mohamed came to the U.S. alone 3 months ago from a refugee settlement in Turkey, where he had been living for 3 years. Before Turkey, Mohamed lived in Iraq, where he was born.
So he didn't encounter as much problems as other people that went through as far as going to Turkey. But he was very fortunate that his life was in danger, but not in a way that was urgent. and he needed to seek refuge.
Mohana didn't know what to make of Spokane before he got here, but after experiencing the community, he said he plans to stay.
He likes the air quality, he likes the people, just the friendly community, and he feels like Spokane is a family community.
He said he wants to finish his education and become a fashion model. Mohanad is just one of many refugees relocated to Spokane through World Relief, a national faith-based organization which helps refugees resettling in the United States. World Relief was chosen as Bloomsday's official charity this year. Director Don Cardong says the Bloomsday organization wanted to help bring visibility to the work World Relief does in the Spokane community and to help people understand refugees better.
They've been fleeing violence and war, and it's a little different than what people might think.
As part of being the official charity, World Relief received donations from Bloomsday runners, who had the option to donate when they registered. Bloomsday also gave them a booth at the trade show and 300 clear plastic backpacks to provide to people who did not bring their own. They were given away for a suggested donation price. World Relief also independently sold t-shirts that said, "I run with refugees," as a way for people to show their support. Mark Finney, the director of World Relief in Spokane, said that being chosen as the official charity was a blessing.
We do have some significant financial challenges that have come as a result of the executive actions since President Trump was elected. And so this is an opportunity for us to shore up some of our funding, because a lot of what we've done in the past has been pretty dependent on the federal resettlement program and the grants that come through that.
Even though President Trump's orders were halted, World Relief is having to prepare for a large reduction in their federal funding, which they are given to resettle refugees. Finney said he hopes that partnering with Bloomsday will help them to get funding and recognition, allowing them to help the refugees they wish to serve.
All these people come from some kind of a situation that's, at the very least, uncomfortable and often life-threatening. And it puts the rest of your life in perspective when you're with people who really understand what it's like to sacrifice and suffer in ways that most of us in America don't have to face.
I'm Emily Goodell reporting.
And speaking of Emily, she and two of her Whitworth University peers will be part of next week's Inland Journal, talking more about some of the presence of refugees in the Spokane community. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. We thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week, same time, same place. I'm Doug Nadvornik.